Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Thomas Crogwell, who is an author of more than 25 books, including Saints Behaving Badly. He writes a monthly column on patron saints and has been featured by the Wall Street Journal, St. Anthony Messenger, Catholic Digest, CNN, and EWTN. His book, Stealing Lincoln's Body, was made into a two-hour documentary on the History Channel. With Thomas Crogwell, we go inside the pages of Saints Preserved, an encyclopedia of relics, published by Image Books. A finger, a lock of hair, a crucifix, a chalice. If such items belong to a saint, they are considered to be relics, and as such are venerated by the Catholic Church. In Saints Preserved, an encyclopedia of relics, author Thomas J. Crogwell takes us on an exhilarating journey through the life and death of more than 300 saints, and along the way enlightens us about the sometimes strange bits and pieces that the saints left behind, including entries on the famous, like St. Peter, St. Francis, St. Therese of Lisieux, and the not-so-famous, St. Foy, St. Sirica, and St. Cryconicus. Saints Preserved also features information on such notable relics as the Holy House where Jesus, Mary, and Joseph lived, the Crown of Thorns, the Holy Grail, and the seven places that claim to possess the head of St. John the Baptist, among them a mosque in Damascus. Moreover, this book includes major relics that are enshrined in the United States. For example, the complete skeleton of the Roman martyr St. Vibian, enshrined in the cathedral in Los Angeles. From the extraordinary Achaean relics to the remains of St. Zita, Saints Preserved is an indispensable compendium for spiritual seekers, history buffs, and anyone interested in deepening their understanding of the Catholic faith. We now begin our discussion with Thomas Crogwell. Tom, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Chris, it's always a pleasure. I'd come back and talk to you anytime.
Oh, you're so kind, especially to offer us books like Saints Preserved, an encyclopedia of relics. Talk to us about relics.
Well, you know, as you know, I've spent a lot of years studying the saints, and it's just inevitable. You know, if you're studying saints, eventually you get around to shrines and pilgrimages and those bits and pieces of them left behind that we call relics. So here we are.
Well, how does one obtain a relic? I think that's the very first question people have.
Well, you know, there is a official channel that you go through in Rome, but it's very difficult for private individuals to get a relic these days. They really prefer that it goes to a church, a chapel, an oratory, because the fear is, and this is well-founded, that, you know, people pass away, the relatives come in, they don't know what to do with this little bone chip that grandma had, and who knows where it winds up. And I'll tell you one of the places where they wind up, and that's eBay. You can log on to eBay any day of the week, and you're going to find literally hundreds and hundreds of relics up for sale because families just don't know what to do with these sacred objects. And it creates a problem for Catholics because on the one hand, we're forbidden from buying sacred objects, but on the other hand, if we don't rescue these relics, which is how I tend to look at it, who knows where they'll wind up?
Yeah, because they are very precious to us.
Oh, and absolutely.
Explain for the folks who are unfamiliar why we would consider, let's start this way. There are different degrees of relics.
Yes, there are. There are three categories. A first-class relic is actually from the body, bone, hair, blood. A second-class relic is something that, an object that belonged to the saint. A rosary, clothing, letters, books, even furniture. A third-class relic is usually a little piece of cloth or maybe a holy card that has been touched to a first-class relic. And there are lots and lots and lots of those because those are, you could almost, pardon the expression, manufacture them. So those are the three categories. The most precious, of course, are the first class relics, the actual body of the saint.
The third class relic, we'll talk about the one that you may see that's, I've seen them on beautiful holy cards.
Yep.
That have, they're usually like a red dot with, as you have just said, the piece of cloth. And that has been touched to the body, the first class relic of an actual saint.
Yes.
Now, why would that be important?
Well, we actually have it rooted, believe it or not, it's rooted in sacred scripture. In the Acts of the Apostles, we find that the very first Christians would take napkins, pieces of cloth, to St. Paul and ask him to touch them. And then they would take these, what we now call a third-class relic, back home and touch the cloth to someone who was sick or to someone who was possessed of an evil spirit, and they'd be healed. So, you know, here we've got, you know, gospel truth, that God will work wonders through sacred relics when it is according to his will, of course. You know, this isn't a rabbit's foot we're talking about here. It's not magic. But a third-class relic is nonetheless efficacious.
Well, it really speaks of the power of grace, doesn't it?
Oh, and absolutely.
In particular, that tremendous virtue of faith
that
really draws grace to us, kind of like that woman who touched the cloak of Jesus, and he wasn't sure who it was, but just her tremendous faith in touching that cloth drew grace to herself. I mean,
yes, exactly.
That power.
And, you know, there again, we would have the cloak of Jesus, something that belonged to him, his clothing. That's a second-class relic. I don't mean to get too too excessively precise about it, but you know, the Catholic Church is organized and orderly, so we have categories.
I think that's an important thing for us. It gives us structure, and it gives us a sense of how much, you know, how we are to pray, and it helps order us, and it points our hearts and our minds to that great solidarity in the communion and the saints that we're
absolutely
all traveling together.
Good.
And Thomas, in Saints Preserved, you talk about the second class relics as well. I mean, that's something that is that clothing or that item that was used. I remember seeing relics from Blessed Miguel Pro, and here is a martyr. And this was the pen he used. This was the hat that he wore when he was hiding from those who were trying to capture him and eventually would do so and kill him. And those are very precious as well, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And, you know, there's we find the same sense of the sacred in the secular realm, too. All of us have heirlooms from family members who have passed away, whom we loved and still love, and to own, you know, grandma's china that comes out at Christmas, or grandpa's ring, all of these things that give us a physical, tangible connection to someone we love is perfectly natural. It's deeply rooted in human nature, and it's even more important when we're dealing with someone who's not only that we love, like St. Anne or St. Anthony, but who is now a glorified saint in heaven. So we go from this perfectly natural response to something that is supernatural.
Yeah, and being in the presence of those second-class relics, I mean, sometimes you can actually go into a room.
Yes.
Maybe it's the home where St. Bernadette Subiru lived.
Exactly.
You know, those types of things, and it helps us put our hearts and minds, it unites them in a special way because we remember, don't we?
Right. You know, my sister and brother-in-law had the privilege of going to Lourdes a couple of years ago with the Knights of Malta. And my sister talked about going into St. Bernadette's home in Lourdes and just being overwhelmed by, first of all, oh my God, how poor these people were. And secondly, to realize that out of this wretched little hovel came this young woman who experienced such a tremendous grace to, you know, to see the Blessed Mother and speak with her 15 times. Extraordinary.
And of course, then we have the first class relics. Woo!
Yeah, the mother lode.
The mother lode. It is. It can be even, you know, the smallest pieces that I've seen that are in certain containers, and we'll talk more about the specifics of those. But also that tremendous gift, of course, which. I don't want to say it's sensationalistic, but there are those incorruptible bodies, the bodies of the saints that are probably the most prominent when we speak of those types of items.
Oh, yeah. I know. And also among the most mysterious, you know, because why would this saint be incorrupt, but St. Peter is, just bones.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Yes, literally. So we don't know, you know, this is what one of those moments where we stand there and say God has his reasons. But they are marvelous. And, just a few years ago in Italy, the church permitted scientists to examine incorrupt bodies of about 50 saints.
Mm.
And they found in some cases the saint had been embalmed.
Mm-hmm.
And in other cases, there was a natural reason for it, the type of soil that they'd been buried in, the type of sarcophagus their body had been placed in. But then they found cases where the scientists threw up their hands and said, we don't know.
Mm.
This, you know, we can't give you a reason that by the laws of nature, this person should have deteriorated by now. We just don't know.
Yeah, it sometimes can be confusing because if you go on the internet and you Google incorrupt bodies, for example. Okay, yes, I've done that. All right. But when you do that, it brings up images that aren't necessarily there. You can't just trust what you might see on the internet is
right.
Obvious. That's why I go to your book, Saints Preserved by Thomas Cromwell. Yeah. But the reason it being, like, for example, they'll show this beautiful, beautiful image of, say, St. Vincent de Paul.
Right.
But that's not St. Vincent de Paul.
No, it's a wax figure.
That's right, and it can be confusing for some who may see those figures. Like if you do travel on pilgrimage, if you see the body, because that was a way of preserving the images and encasing them in that type of what would you call that? The wax casing, essentially.
Right. Yes. And there's in the United States Catholicism in the United States is a little different from Catholicism in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, the desire to see the body of the saint is, or has been, very intense. In the United States, much less so. And maybe it's because we came into a country that was overwhelmingly Protestant. I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
at the same time in Europe, there was also an impulse to make it look beautiful. So if all they had was the skeleton, or if the skin was discolored, which of course would only be natural, then
mm-hmm.
they came up with this wax solution, which is beautiful. So, we don't have to like it, we just have to understand it.
That's right, and that's not to diminish the sacredness of that, because that's very much at the heart of Catholic theology as far as the beauty and the sacredness of the human body.
Absolutely.
Because we were created soul and body. And so the
right.
body is venerated.
Exactly. You know, St. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians that we're temples of the Holy Ghost. That means the body's sacred, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important. That's why anyone who dies, we treat the body with respect. But when that person turns out to have been chosen by God to be a saint, then it gets even more respect.
Yeah, I just, it always touches my heart so deeply when I think about St. Persades and Prudenziana, the two sisters from ancient Rome, who in that first generation of Christians who were being martyred, and they would go out and at the risk of their own lives, and they would be persecuted for that. They would go out and collect the remnants of the saints that would be martyred. Those nameless people, I mean, at least God knows them, but we don't. But those holy Roman martyrs, and to keep them safe and to hide them in their home. I mean, you've been in that church, haven't you?
Where you bet.
Oh, there's something tremendous there, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. You know, that's one of the things about Rome where you go expecting to be impressed, and mm-hmm. what happens is you wind up being overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so steeped in Catholic history and in the sanctity, particularly of the age of the martyrs, that it's like a 2x4 between the eyes. It's just, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to the catacombs, then that's, you know, it's completely off the charts now.
I do want to go back to when we talk about those bodies that were incorrupt. I mean, I didn't want to say that just because they are in this wax casing, as you brought forward for us, there are those saints whose bodies have remained essentially free from decay, which is remarkable. They're not in vacuum pack sealed,
right,
preserved cryogenics. Why do you suppose they have remained for us a witness?
I don't know, except the only thing I can speculate is that every once in a while, God will do something extraordinary. You know, he's not going to part the Red Sea every day. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, there will be this incredibly dramatic reminder, I am here, I do exist, and I made the laws of nature, and I can defy them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the message of incorruptible things.
Of course, we've been talking about the a whole body that's been preserved. There are those cases of relics that it's just pieces of a person's body, and it was a way of venerating. It was a way. I think when we talk about that practice in the church, particularly during the Middle Ages, that became a very, very important source of pilgrimage for folks who couldn't hop on a plane or get in a car or go on the train to get to a certain area. It was an extensive undertaking to make pilgrimage.
Oh, yeah, and very dangerous, too, because, you know, the bandits realized, all right, pilgrims are on this road, you know, and they're carrying cash because there were no credit cards or ATMs. So, you know, they were easy pickings, which is why pilgrims very quickly started traveling in large groups. I mean, even something, if you've ever read Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, you find that, you know, a few dozen people would get together because it was a lot safer way to travel. But even then, you know, St. Bridget of Sweden made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and en route she was shipwrecked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not unusual. So it's a... it was an intense desire in the Middle Ages to visit shrines, but it was also a risky undertaking.
Well, let's talk about some of those that are standouts for you. Of course, in Saints Preserved, you have outlined so many wonderful stories and brought forward, not just about the relic, but about the saint, the person who it's attributed to. I love your work. You're always, Thomas Crogwell, you're just such a standout.
Oh, gosh.
But, well, I mean it. You're not quite a relic yet.
No, not yet.
But to tell us what would be a standout for you.
Well, let's start with what today is. Today is July 25th. It's the Feast of St. James the Greater.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest shrines of the Middle Ages, a tremendous goal of pilgrims from all over Europe, and it's a tricky story on the one hand, because we know that St. James was martyred in the Holy Land, and yet his bones are up in northern Spain, and we're not exactly sure how they got there, but what's interesting is that the place where they were found, which was about the year 800 and something, turned out to be a first century Christian cemetery.
Mm.
So, you know, oftentimes with very ancient relics, we don't have, you know, we don't have a notarized document that tells us this is authentic. But what happens oftentimes is that we find some extraordinary clues which makes us step back and say, okay, you know, my first impulse might be to say this was a case of wishful thinking in the Middle Ages, but now I'm having second and third thoughts. You know, it's so it's, you know, maybe St. James really is there.
I think the greatest witness in the 20th century and bleeding over into the 21st century is the bones of St. Peter.
That's an extraordinary story, and stay tuned. I'm writing a book on it.
Yay! Okay. Well, we'll save that description for later then.
Okay.
But get St. preserved, everyone, because that will whet your appetite for the new book. But, the relics of St. Paul, they're in the process right now. I mean, they really do feel that they are at St. Paul's outside the walls under the altar. I mean,
Right. Recent
science has been able to help us to determine that.
Well, even up in, you know, in Padua, they have said for many centuries that they had the body, the skeleton, rather, of St. Luke the Evangelist. And it was only a couple of years ago that the custodians of the church called in forensic scientists and said, would you take a look at the skeleton? And they came back and they said, well, the man is from the first century. He's Syrian. And he's in his 70s, maybe early 80s, which all matched up with the facts and the tradition about St. Luke.
Mm.
So, you know, sometimes science is there to maybe not to prove absolutely, but within a shadow of a doubt, but to reinforce a tradition that the church has had for centuries and centuries. So It's always exciting when that happens.
Yeah, it really is. To talk to us also about the United States. I mean, often we think we have to go over to Europe to
Right. Experience
this. In the United States, there's an incredible bounty of relics.
Well, you know what happened? It's an interesting coincidence. In the 1800s, as the church, as you know, lots and lots of Catholics were emigrating to the U.S., and the church was expanding and new dioceses were being formed. When these new, let's say, frontier bishops would go to Rome for their ad limina visit, they showed up at the exact same time that, by accident, archaeologists in Italy rediscovered the catacombs. They'd been lost for centuries. And in the catacombs, they found the relics of long-forgotten martyrs,
mm-hmm.
including St. Philomena, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that one, Thomas.
And
bring back St. Philomena. That's what I say.
Bring back St. Philomena. So what Pope Pius IX would do was he would give these bishops a complete skeleton of a Roman martyr. And so we have them in Cincinnati, in Los Angeles, in Dubuque, all over the place. St. Louis has one. And so here are all of these, our direct connection to the age of the martyrs, right here in the United States.
Well, there are those of you out there that want to know. I want to know all the names and what's the name of the book. And, of course, it's Saints Preserved by Thomas Crogwell. And anything by Thomas you can trust. And for those who desire to have that connection, to be able to pay honor and homage and to venerate the memory and the lives of a saint, and who want to be able to acquire one, how do they go about that in a way that is fitting and actually honors the saint?
Well, you know, the problem is that it's a convent in Rome of Augustinian nuns. I'm sorry that the name has slipped my mind. They're not going to give it to a private individual anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only way to go is that, although it might seem a little tacky, mm-hmm. but think of it really as a rescue mission, is to go on eBay and, you know, save a relic. And then I would make one more stipulation. In your will, tell the family what you want to do with it.
Right.
Tell them what it is, and tell them to give it to the parish church or to a shrine. You know, I really think this should be a two-step process. First, rescue the relic. Secondly, make provisions for it after you're gone.
Now, you'll know whether it's a relic. I mean, there are certain clues beyond just the small case, potentially, that says the name of the saint. There is an accompanying paperwork that should be with it that has official documentation.
Right, and oftentimes on eBay, you know, I'm sorry that we have to keep coming back to this, but you know, these are the realities we're dealing with in 2011. look for the one that has the documentation. They do appear because, just like it was in the Middle Ages, there are people out there who are manufacturing relics, and you don't want something bogus. I in my book, I specify the locations of 9 heads of St. John the Baptist. So it happens.
That's
but,
right.
Be prudent, be cautious. Look for the one that has the paperwork.
And when in doubt, and your heart is really aching to seek this out, check it out with your chancery.
Yeah,
Go to the chancery of your archdiocese and or diocese and inquire, ask the questions. They want to help you too. They want to make sure that you're whatever has come across your path, that it is something that will help you to grow in your faith and not have you be taken advantage of.
Right, exactly. I mean, sometimes if looking through the listings, it's like the kid in the candy shop. So you can be a little dazzled, but exercise prudence, exercise caution, and talk to people who know about these things. And as you say, the Chancery Office has somebody who can walk you through this process.
Thomas Crogwell, I think this is just the beginning of a beautiful discussion on and a continuing one, not only on relics, but on the lives of the saints. You'll come back, won't you?
I'd be delighted.
Great. Thomas, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Chris.
With Thomas Crogwell, we've been going inside the pages of Saints Preserved, an encyclopedia of relics. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to www.randomhouse.com, the website for its publisher, Image Books, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.